Welcome to the Monitor Daily Podcast. It's Wednesday, May 18th. Thanks for joining us. I'm Linda Feldman.
And I'm Dave Scott.
Big John Fetterman's easy win in Pennsylvania's Democratic Senate primary came as no surprise, despite a last-minute health emergency. Now, the literally larger-than-life lieutenant governor, he's 6'8" and often clad in shorts and a hoodie, will test the idea that the Democratic Party's increasingly progressive brand can broaden its appeal if it comes in radically different packaging, as the Monitor's Story Hinckley wrote in a recent profile. Who his Republican opponent will be remains uncertain, with the top two primary finishers headed for a likely recount. Dr. Mehmet Oz, of TV fame, clearly benefited from the endorsement of former President Donald Trump, while former hedge fund CEO David McCormick represents a more old-style GOP choice. In the Pennsylvania governor's race, Democrats went mainstream with State Attorney General Josh Shapiro, while the Republicans nominated Doug Mastriano, a far-right state senator who fought to overturn President Joe Biden's 2020 victory in this crucial battleground state. He was also a last-minute endorsee of Mr. Trump, though that seemed more an effort to join the bandwagon of an expected winner. Both contests could have national implications. The Senate race may determine control of the chamber, and the next governor will get to appoint Pennsylvania's Secretary of State, the official in charge of elections. In most states, it's an elective position, as the Monitor's Simon Montlake notes in today's piece on those increasingly important contests. But in Pennsylvania, if Mr. Mastriano wins, he will oversee the conduct of the 2024 presidential election in the Commonwealth. Four other states held primaries Tuesday, and Trump endorsees had mixed results. Most notable was the defeat of controversial North Carolina Representative Madison Cawthorn, the young firebrand who so alienated key Republicans that some openly advocated against his renomination. Last year, Ms. Hinckley interviewed him and posed this fateful question: is Madison Cawthorn the future of Trumpism? Clearly not, but there's no doubt the spirit and politics of the former president remain central to the Republican brand. Now, today's stories. Our first story. A high-profile primary in Georgia is testing the salience of former President Donald Trump's disproved claims of widespread fraud in 2020. At stake, oversight of the 24 elections.
Candidates echoing former President Donald Trump's disproved claims of widespread election fraud are currently running for Secretary of State in 17 of the 27 states where the office will be on the ballot in the fall. Trump-endorsed Republicans are running in Wisconsin, Michigan, and Arizona, all states where Mr. Trump contested the 2020 results. The most high-profile race is in Georgia, where GOP Secretary of State Brad Raffensperger famously refused to find 11,780 more votes for Mr. Trump, insisting on the accuracy of the 2020 results in his state. Mr. Raffensperger is facing a tough four-way primary on May 24th in a contest that will test the salience of Republican voters' concerns about election integrity. The power of secretaries of state can vary from place to place, but most are tasked with overseeing how votes are cast, counted, and certified. Typically, secretaries of state leave their party hat at the door, says Tammy Patrick, a former federal elections official in Arizona. That norm may be tested by a slew of candidates who are running specifically on a platform of disproved or unprovable claims about 2020, and who will be tasked with administering the 2024 election when Mr. Trump may run again. This story was reported by Simon Montlake in Atlantic, Georgia, for The Monitor.
Coming of age during a pandemic that put a priority on collective well-being, a young generation of workers is rekindling labor movement passions and scoring some successes.
A surge of union activity is investing new energy in the labor movement. Successful organizing campaigns at some of America's best-known companies, such as Amazon, Apple, and Starbucks, combined with a surge of teacher strikes, are bringing new focus to workers' demands, especially those of warehouse workers, sales clerks, and others who don't have the luxury of working remotely. Much of the energy behind the surge is coming from workers in their 20s, the tail end of the millennial generation, as well as Gen Z, who are just beginning to land their first jobs. Many exude an organizing zeal not seen in decades. Whether this period leads to a resurgence of unions in the United States is not yet clear. Corporations have crushed new unions in the past, and today's labor targets show little sign that they're backing down now. The pandemic has added its own cast to young workers' demands for better pay, longer breaks, and a say in how these companies are run. What you're seeing is the emergence of a new generation of organizers, says Toby Higbee, a UCLA labor historian. It's hard to stop this stuff once it gets out to a lot of people. This story was reported by Laurent Belsey in Watertown, Massachusetts, for The Monitor.
In her appreciation for Shireen Abu Akleh, the Palestinian-American journalist killed covering an Israeli military raid, our contributor recalls the strength of her pioneering example and the warmth of her mentorship.
I can never forget Shireen Abu Akleh's lesson in courage, writes Fatima Abdul Karim. It is a lesson I was reminded of when I learned that my mentor and friend had been shot and killed last week, reportedly by Israeli forces while covering an Israeli military raid in the northern West Bank for Al Jazeera. There was no point in putting ourselves in danger, Shireen constantly told us younger journalists. Courage in journalism came only through asking for the truth, not in anything else. She was shot and killed seeking the truth, wearing her press vest and a helmet. Over the past two decades of insecurity and turmoil for the Palestinian people, Shireen became a trusted voice for Palestinians and Arabs around the world. Part of a new generation of female field reporters in the Arab world, she guided me and others through the uncertain and dangerous times with warmth. Her three-day funeral procession from Jenin to Nablus, then Ramallah and Jerusalem, brought people to the streets in a message of gratitude for a woman welcomed into every household like a daily meal. Even in death, Shireen cast light onto the harsh realities of Palestinians' lives under occupation. The bullet that struck her and the turmoil of her funeral renewed Palestinians' awareness of their urgent need to tell their narrative, our narrative. This first-person essay was written by Fatima Abdul Karim in Ramallah, West Bank, for The Monitor.
Dedication, humility, love. Those are just a few of the qualities volunteers who maintain the Appalachian Trail bring to the paths year after year.
Why build trails? Asked Chris English, a technical trail specialist for the Appalachian Trail Conservancy, at the start of a trail maintenance training session for volunteers in Virginia. Trails, she explains, are a compromise. Humans want to see nature. But nature doesn't always appreciate the interest. Trails solve that problem by concentrating folks into a single, relatively small path, she says. The arrangement maximizes people's exposure to nature and minimizes their impact. But this is a fragile agreement that requires constant maintenance, and the pandemic has made that harder. When indoor gatherings were off limits, people went outdoors in record numbers. And not knowing basic hiking etiquette, they made a mess. But that hasn't stopped the volunteers. Last fiscal year, the Potomac Appalachian Trail Club amassed 2,000 more volunteer hours than it did the year before the pandemic. Russell Riggs, one of those volunteers, is a Washington real estate lobbyist by trade and a trail maintainer by heart. He worked the Rose River Loop for 10 years. He says, I've gone out in all seasons, all kinds of weather, and every single time, I've never regretted it because you always see something beautiful, I think love is probably not too strong of a word, he says. This story was reported by Noah Robertson in Luray, Virginia, for the Monitor.
Now, commentary from the Monitor's editorial board on elections in Lebanon. More than three-quarters of Lebanon's population lives in poverty. Among young people, more than 70% want to emigrate. And the electoral system remains rigged for religion-based parties. So last Sunday, when Lebanon held parliamentary elections for the first time in 4 years, what did its voters decide to do? They made sure the Islamist group Hezbollah and its Christian-based allies lost their majority in parliament. They boosted the number of anti-Hezbollah members of parliament. And most unexpected of all, they voted in 16 independent, reform-minded activists who could be kingmakers in forming a new government. This election result fits a recent pattern in the Middle East of people not wanting to be subject to political systems based along religious lines, and instead wanting to be treated as individuals in need of good secular governance, free of patronage by sectarian leaders. The major religions of the Middle East teach their followers that God, or Allah, sees each individual as created in the divine image. Now, voters in Lebanon have sent a signal that democracy relies on treating all citizens as equals, not as mere members of a demographic group. That's a wrap for the news. You can find the full-length versions of these stories in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. For more Monitor audio, including our serial podcasts, go to csmonitor.com/podcasts. Thank you for joining us. Come again tomorrow when we profile the Angel of Vorzel, who saved the lives of 203 Ukrainians trapped behind Russian lines. Today's Christian Science Spiritual Perspective contributor shares how recognizing that we are created by God to express patience, kindness, and wisdom, rather than reactiveness or frustration, dissolves anger and opens the way to resolution. You can find the column in today's issue or at csmonitor.com/daily. We want to give a quick thanks to our staff, including today's audio production team, Jeff Turton, Tim Malone, and Tara Adhikari.
This podcast is produced by the Christian Science Monitor. Copyright 2022.